Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm your host, Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Our podcast today is brought to you by the First Friday Family Fun Nights. Put it on your calendar now to join the fun. It's the first Friday of every month, and it is always a lot of fun. Today is our 25th UUSM podcast. And our guest is Sean Collins. Sean is a Bay Area native born in San Jose who was brought up in the Catholic tradition. He's been affiliated with the Unitarian Universalist Church starting in Sunnyvale with Reverend Roger Jones for more than 25 years. He's married to his wonderful wife, Karen. They have two college-age children, Mikey and Matthew. Sean sings tenor in the UUSM choir. He went to both San Jose State and San Francisco State, where he obtained two master's degrees, an MA in political science and an MBA, as well as a secondary education teaching credential in government, econ, and history. Sean is also a certified project management professional. He is a musician who plays both trumpet and guitar. He enjoys outdoor activities such as hiking, jogging, and skiing. He performed his first half Ironman triathlon with a team challenge when he turned 55 in 2015 in honor of his sister who has ulcerative colitis. He retired more than 10 years ago from HP, where he met his wife, Karen, at the help desk. He spent more than 23 years at HP, where they sent him around the world on various cool adventures, even to Houston.
That's right.
He now works at PG&E as a remote sensing program manager within their electric engineering department. He has also taught both econ and poli-sci courses at the junior college level. He looks forward to continuing to serve in the choir as a worship associate and maybe even the board again. Sean is working on planning out his next stage of life, the encore career, as they call it.
Yes.
Sean, welcome to the Connections Podcast. I'm so glad that we finally found the time to do this, and I've been looking forward to it for a long time. It seems like that we've been talking about doing
Yeah, we have.
So tell our listeners more about your family, whatever that means to
you. Okay. Before we jump into that, I'd like to give a plug for the First Family Fun Night, because we had it at our house.
Yes.
And I just want people to know that you don't have to have a family to come to First Family Fun Night. Just come by yourself if you want, right?
Yeah.
So there's just a good plug there. So
good.
And it's also an honor to be here with you, Jack. And we are so honored to have you as part of the USA.
I just thought
you'd like to know that as well. But so jump into my family.
Yes.
Yes. I'm half Italian and half British Irish. And I just found out the British Irish part a couple years ago from Ancestry.com. My dad was adopted. The story is my mom's family came from Sicily and they came over the whole Ellis Island thing in the late 1800s, basically to get away from the mafia, who were initially protecting people who were working in the mines and then eventually end up turning on them. They got out and got in a ship, and that was the day when you would go to Ellis Island and they'd stamp your passport and say, "Welcome to America," right? I mean,
yeah.
Right? Bang. They ended up in Chicago, and they realized that that was pretty much as bad as was back in Sicily, because basically the mafia people and all the crime and corruption came over. And somebody said, "Hey, you know, there's the hiring in Santa Clara Valley," and that was the fruit basket of the world in those days, right? So they came over here, and they got involved in the canneries that were here and picking apricots and all that stuff. My mother was born in San Jose, and she grew up in Willow Glen. That's where my grandparents were, and a lot of my family's still in San Jose to this day. So on my dad's side, he was adopted, and it was just a couple of years ago that I was on Ancestry.com, and this guy shows up as my first cousin.
Wow.
His name is Sewell. And so I write this email to this guy, and I said, "Hey, did you give up somebody for adoption, say, 1925 in San Francisco?" And later, he writes back, "Yes. Send me a picture of your dad." I did, and he goes, "Oh, my God, this is a match." He goes, "He looks just like my dad." So I'm like, whoa, we've connected ever since. So there's Glenn and Donna. They're older than I am, but they were 3 years apart, my dad and his brother that he never knew, obviously, Douglas. They had my dad's birth certificate. His name was, instead of Ray Collins, which is, we know him as, he was Melvin Sewell. Ah. The other funny story was, is that, I said, where do you live, Glenn? And he goes, oh, you never heard of it. Small town up in the hills here. And I'm like, well, yeah, give me a shot. And he goes, it's called Dorrington. I'm like, the same Dorrington on the way to Bear Valley on Highway 4? And he's like, yeah. And I said, the one we've been passing for probably the last 20 years because we have a condo in Bear Valley. And he's like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
And so we just skied with him last week. It's a wild story, you know?
That
so,
really is.
That's really cool. Yeah. It's funny because I was talking to the boys. I said, you know, our last name's supposed to be Sewell. And they're both like, yeah, we don't want it. You know, we like Collins.
Right, we'll go with Collins.
So that's my family, according to ancestry and stuff. Pretty much 50% the British Northern thing and then 50% Southern. So it's an interesting kind of mix.
Mm, wonderful. And what are your boys doing now? What about that generation of your family?
Interesting. Matthew is 20. Going to CSM, he's now a philosophy major because he just loves talking about ideas and arguing about things. I said, well, you know, you could go into law. And he goes, I never thought of that. Yeah. He's like, oh, I kind of like that idea. He's working at the rec center, the same rec center he went to as a kid. Mm. And his boss was his rec lead when he was there like 10 years ago. So it was so trippy because when I told, we call him Big Mike, I said, hey, Matthew's thinking about working here as a rec leader. He goes, give me his resume. And so now he's working there. A little trippy because Matthew is like, he looks just like Matthew, except he's just a lot taller, you know? Yeah. Mikey graduated from UCSC in bioinformatics, which is a biological engineering, math, computer science degree all smushed together. The pandemic really wiped him out. He had this trajectory and he was just going gangbusters and then he just couldn't go to school and then his roommates got sick and it just really took the wind out of his sails. So he graduated last June. He's been taking a gap year off and just skiing and just trying to get his thoughts together. And now he's applying. He just applied for a job working in the lab at UC Berkeley. He's back in the game, but he just needed to clear his brain. His parents were here to support, but we're also here to give him a nudge, you know? And
sure.
And I was like, that's almost a year.
You know? Yeah.
I think it's time to start looking. He goes, you know, Dad, you're right. I'm going to start looking. You know? So good. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Definitely. You've had a few jobs in your career between your work at your various jobs in your years at HP and then teaching econ and poli-sci work at PG&E.
Yeah.
Which thing has been your favorite?
My favorite, of course, is working at Hewlett-Packard because Hewlett-Packard, HP, is the mothership for so much of what Silicon Valley is, or at least it was, sure. Before the corporations, before Bill and Dave died and the corporations took over. But up until that point, they ran their company like an extended family, right? And they said, we hire the best and the brightest, and we make sure that they have the keys to get the job done, and they basically tell us what to do. It's the whole concept of agile, what they're calling humanity,
right.
Pretty much was born there at HP. The whole concept of management by walking around, the whole concept of having cubicles instead of offices. When we bought Compaq and we went down to Houston, right, and we actually toured their site, it was like the opposite of HP because the Compaq site was all offices. Rows and rows of offices. It was just so different for the HP people. Like, where are all the cubicles and where's the open floors? What a different culture, you know? HP sent me around the world. And Bill and Dave apparently would check out sites and they would get to personally choose where to build where they want to. So they would Colorado Springs, Atlanta, Georgia, just some really cool places. Then when we were overseas, Grenoble, France, right? Böblingen, Germany, which is near Stuttgart, Singapore, Japan. So all these places that they picked for their sites, I got to go to as part of being an information technology IT project manager. And then, of course, the whole year 2000 thing was a big one. We were going all over the world to make sure everybody was ready for it for the year 2000 project. It was so cool. So that was, I'd say that was the most fun. In fact, when Karen and I first got together, I was in Singapore. And she said, the next time you go, I'm coming with you. And guess what? They didn't send me again. She'll never forget that.
I bet. Obviously, music has been an important force in your life.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Gong Show Roadshow.
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. And so in high school, I went to Los Gatos High School, and we had a fairly large band and pep band and jazz band. Music and art was really big. In fact, we have, you know, in Los Gatos High School, we had our own wing.
Wow.
We had the band room. We had the choir and orchestra room, and we had practice rooms. One of the guys got word that the Gong Show Roadshow was coming into town, and they were at Great America Amusement Park area. When I was a kid, it was Marriott's Great America, and they were having these auditions, and if you won, you got to go actually on the Gong Show. And for those people who don't know what the Gong Show was, it was just this variety show. And if they didn't like you, they'd hit this big gong right in the middle of your act. And then if you got the gong, you got the hook, right? So we were at the pep band, and our song was the Virgin de la Macarena, the one they play with the bullfighters, right? And we have this guy, his name was Marv Ellis, who was our lead trumpet player, Marvelous Marv. He was really good. So anyway, so we're playing, dun, dun, he comes up, dun, 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 and he starts playing these super high notes. The judges were just like, their hair's like flying back. And we finished, and we didn't get gonged. And they said, you kids are great. You got any other songs? So we played another one. I think we played All Right Now or something like that. And they're like, cool. And anyway, we didn't win. There was another group that won, but it was just really fun. And even the group that won was like, you guys blew us away.
That was nice.
It was really fun. It's the Gong Show Roadshow. We didn't get gonged.
In Wild Mountain Time?
Yeah, so I was in a folk group for a long time that we called Wild Mountain Time with the, you know, T-H-Y-M-E, and there's the song, and we'll all go together to pick Wild Mountain Time. There were five of us. We just got together and did music, and there was a cafe called Cafe Zeno's. It was right downtown Santa Cruz, and it's not there anymore. My whole area got wiped out by the earthquake, but we used to have a regular Sunday gig. And we'd play just folk music because we were inspired by Joan Baez and Peter Paul and Mary and stuff like that. And then my friend Mike was a union member doing ambulance driving. He was unionizing and stuff like that. He got involved in a lot of these guys from Santa Cruz. And so they're like, hey, you got this band? You want to come and play for a rally or something? And so we got involved in playing for all these political rallies and eventually bigger and bigger rallies. Like somebody would come in to give a talk like at the Loud Nelson Center. It'd be like the band that would warm them up or something or warm the crowd up. And there's like 800 or 1,000 people. That's pretty cool. I really miss doing that. So we had a really good sound. So.
Ever do Gilbert and Sullivan?
I've played in the Gilbert and Sullivan Orchestra, and I think I was telling you this story where Jen Kiernan came out of the blue and said, hey, I found an old program with your name on it.
And oh, wow.
Apparently we were in the same orchestra years ago, and Paul was there too. And I'm like, whoa. I love Gilbert and Sullivan. I played second trumpet in that band. I've done a lot of shows. Yeah, I love Gilbert and Sullivan. I just love that music. It's really fun.
So your encore career that you're thinking about, is it going to involve music?
No. I'm actually thinking of going into finance. That's my idea of doing it, because that's something I just really like.
Congrats on the half Ironman triathlon.
Yeah.
But it's been 8 years.
Right.
Going to do another one anytime soon?
I don't know about the half Ironman. My sister tries to keep me doing that. The goal I have is just a plain old triathlon. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the four different flavors. There's a sprint triathlon, which is like a half tri. The triathlon itself is 1,500 meters or yards of swimming, roughly, and then maybe 24, 26 miles on your bike, and then a 10K, 6.2 at the end, right? That's like the mothership of triathlon. If I can do that, I feel like pretty good. We always do at least a sprint triathlon a year, because they have one up at Bear Valley that we do. We just did it last year, Karen and I. We do a sprint, maybe one full try. But the half Ironman, that's intense. And the intense part of it is it's like a mile swim. That's okay. But then it's 56-mile bike ride. I'm not a big bike person. That's the hardest for me. And then the run at the end is a half marathon, which is fine with me. That's easy.
Yeah.
But getting up to that 56-mile bike ride was my hurdle when I did it. And the thing is, it's an eight-hour event, right? For me, because I'm slow, right? So I don't know if I want
to
do that.
How did you get from the Catholic Church to Unitarian Universalism?
Yeah, it's an interesting story because there's something I like about Catholicism. I like the mysticism about it. I grew up with it, of course, with my grandparents, and I gave one of the services on their shrine that they had in their house and all that stuff. They were very much into it. And what I realized later in life, probably early college years, that a lot of what was going on in Catholicism wasn't really in the Bible. It was made up by people who just came up with these things to say and whatnot. I was looking for a religion that allows you to put yourself into it. It's like the whole agile feeling that I was just talking about with HP. I was looking for a church that was more like, well, what do you think? What can you bring to this? How can you make this a better place? How can you make what we're doing a better place, the community better, the world better? Instead, the Catholic Church was very top down. Well, we're going to tell you what to do and when to do it and all this stuff. And there's a certain comfort to that, but I found it to be not very interesting. That's when I started looking for other churches. And I was going to, when I was going to San Jose State, I was going to the Unitarian Church in San Jose. I was thinking, yeah, this is kind of, for me, it's kind of like home. You just feel like, yeah, this is where I fit in. Some of this stuff, you don't agree with everything, but along that whole line of what can you bring to the community versus us just telling you what to say and do was very comforting for me. And I really liked that whole idea, you know, and that's how I got involved in singing in some of the local choirs. I was involved in a choir called the Peace Choir and all that stuff, which is connected to the church. It was cool. And so I've pretty much been in and out ever since then. You know, my best friend Josh, who's a Unitarian, he was actually in the UUA for a couple of years here, and he was the one that married us, you know, so we could say he was the Unitarian minister for a day that actually married Karen and I, so, yeah.
From Palo Alto, you ended up at Sunnyvale?
Well, Karen and I moved, we were in Los Gatos, and we went to the Los Gatos Church.
Okay.
And they were more like a club. They were showing like slides from their trip to India or something. We were like, hey, is this like your deal? Is this what you guys do? Just talk about things? Do you have a minister or anything? They're like, oh yeah, we used to have people like you at our church. They all went to Sunnyvale. Why did they go to Sunnyvale? And they said, well, because they're looking for a minister there and they want more of a spiritual experience. And we said, that's what we want. You know, and they said, you should go there. We said, okay, we're going there.
Yeah, so
we
because went there. You know, if you've seen one Unitarian Universalist church, you've seen one Unitarian Universalist
church.
Yeah,
that's right. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. That's great. So we went there, and they had an intern minister, David Keyes, who was, he had some really powerful sermons. One was, I have a God-shaped hole in my soul. And we were like, whoa, this is pretty cool. And then eventually ended up bring in Roger Jones, who was, I think he's fantastic. Yeah. I brought him back last summer, and it was so good to see Roger. He's so good.
He is.
And so, but then we moved from Los Gatos to Half Moon Bay to be closer to Karen's parents when our kids were younger, so her mom could help take in stuff. And going to Sunnyvale was just too far.
Right.
So that's how we ended up kind of shopping around here, Redwood City, and then we went to UUSM, and Vale Weller was here, and Vale was, she's a lot like Roger. I mean, just they had kind of a very similar style and everything. And we're just like, oh, this is it. This is our home. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's how we ended up here. And eventually we moved back to San Mateo.
Ah, right. So what's the first moment or maybe series of moments when you knew that you belonged in the UU San Mateo community?
Oh, San Mateo. Yeah, when I saw Vale, when we came in, at the first service, we were just like, whoa, this is fantastic. What's interesting about that story is we've had both our kids were kind of small, and so they were part of the RE here. And Karen and I, we'd sit in the back, and then pretty much afterwards we'd leave. And we were looking at each other going, you know, we're not really feeling it. And then we both agreed that we're not really doing much ourselves to make anything happen, right? I remember saying, well, I sing, I can join the choir. I joined the choir first because Karen still had to be with the kids. And then they ended up with daycare in those days because a lot of us had young kids for choir.
Right.
When we'd come to choir practice, they'd have somebody over here in the other room that have the kids, like the Jen Kiernan's and Paul's kids were there and our kids were there and other kids were there. So it was fun.
Yeah.
That's when we both joined the choir. And then once we did that, we realized, oh, okay, now we're part of a community, right? So what we really realized is, yes, you need to make that step, right? You come, but you also need to say, okay, how do I become part of this?
Yeah.
And then from there, of course, we ended up being worship associates and the list goes on. Sure. My wife ended up being the office manager for a while, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You've been a worship associate for a long time.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part of being a worship associate and maybe what's the most challenging part of taking on that role?
Yeah, my favorite part is, we were just talking about this yesterday in the worship associate meetings. I love putting together the summer services. I just like the freedom of like, I can do this beginning to end, you know.
Yeah.
I can do the music. I can get the people to do the readings. I just really like the freedom to build your own creative presentation, artwork or something. And I like that as being a worship associate, that you can put it together and put your heart into it and your stamp. The services that I can build and put together and maybe even do part of the service or the sermon when we did Christmas Eve. It was really hard, but it was really rewarding to be able to put that service together and to make it happen. That's what I enjoy the most.
Right.
The most challenging is you're trying to put all the pieces together and to not let a ball drop.
Right.
They're thinking that somebody was going to cover such and such, or you thought this person was doing that, or maybe they didn't realize it, or that kind of stuff is, I'd say, the most challenging. Roles and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Our congregation is very flexible.
Sure.
So if, say you forgot to ask for an usher for a day.
Right.
Somebody comes in and you just say, hey, can you help?
Me?
Yeah. And they're like, sure.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
It takes a lot of the pressure off of trying to be perfect. I mean,
right.
My job is project management because I just like to plan things, you know,
mm-hmm.
So being able to plan. But I also, on the other hand, when things don't go as planned, I start to feel like, oh, what have I done? Just need to let some of this go and just let things be organic. And sometimes things don't work out as planned. And then guess what? They work out.
You still have the service.
It still has the service. It still is cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Right.
I think you and I are in agreement about summer. Because I think that's going to be really important. I worry about the disengagement in the summer. I really want us to stay engaged. And this summer especially, because we will at some point in the summer get into the sanctuary.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe not as early as we thought a few months ago, but still, it's going to be this summer. And that's going to be huge for people.
So. Fired up.
Yeah.
I know. I totally keep the energy going. I'm with it. And even if it's just a small service, right?
Right.
Even if people just come and you just say, let's just have a discussion or whatever, right? It's just,
right. What
was the big word in Tovis's word, you know, one of those called word jumbles or whatever? Community.
Community.
It's community.
And connections was the next biggest word.
Yes, community and connections, right? So it's hard to be in community connection when you come and just watch a TV screen of some other community, right? So that's what I was saying. I would much rather have us do a scaled down service with who just shows up and just say, you know, we didn't have time to formally plan something out, but we're just going to have a...
Let's
maybe
talk.
Conversation or
right.
Something. But it's us. It's our community.
Yep.
You know what worked in the past really well were things like choir exchanges and pulpit exchanges.
Right.
And even like leadership exchanges. Like maybe one board would go and visit some other one, right? So instead of just saying the whole congregation up and goes, we just pick a group.
Right.
And then move that group. Like I said, maybe the boards would switch or the choirs would switch or something like that. Mm. That was pretty cool.
As we were just discussing, our sanctuary is still undergoing renovations. What are you most looking forward to about getting into the new sanctuary?
Oh, I'm just getting into the whole energy of having the new sanctuary. Just the whole newness of it, because it's going to represent a rebirth. The whole pandemic thing was tough on everybody, right? And even now we're in the back, smushed in the back room,
yeah.
Right? And people are all feeling a little squished. And it's so exciting to see it get full.
It's so full every week now.
Right? But you can tell people, like, but we do have a heater now.
Yes.
Yay. So that's, come on down. I'm excited just to be in the new sanctuary that we can finally say is ADA compliant. We have been talking about this for years, ever since I was on the board years ago. It's finally happening. And so we can have that extra level we never had before of people being able to, you know, come up the ramp, come on in, go use the facilities. All this stuff is so important. And then we can also talk about making it more of a community area now. These things are just happening in a kind of a domino thing or something like that, where it's, okay, we're doing the right thing here, we're doing the right thing here. And what is it all about? It's about community. Let's start with our community. Let's expand it out to our community around here. Let's expand it out to a larger community, right? And how do we do that? Well, we can do that with this new building, with this, and then we need to think about the one down the corner. But part of that rebirth is getting people excited and into it and into that energy.
For sure.
So I see it as a new energy.
I do too.
A new
I
way forward.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. If you could grant 3 wishes to UUSM, what would those be?
The 3 wishes for UUSM is for us to be able to make our mark in this community. I think you're doing this right here. I'm just pointing out the window here where we have the food pantry and the books. So that's cool. I think that would be like my one wish, is that we really start to make our mark in our community. And like I was just saying, that we can use that. We always say transform ourselves in the world, right? So we start with transforming here and what we have around us and then grow out from there.
We're gonna wrap up with quick hitters. I'm going to ask you a quick question. You're going to give me an answer. Are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I am ready.
What's the best sandwich?
The best sandwich is a salad. on sourdough or Italian bread. I used to get that all the time at Subway when I was eating sandwiches.
Does it have mayo on it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mustard?
No.
Celery in the
tuna yeah, salad? Yeah, so it has crunch. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Apple, too. I like apple. Apple and walnut in
tuna
salad.
Oh, yeah, now you're talking. Yes. That's exactly it. Yes, you got it.
What would a perfect day be like for you?
The best day ever. You ever watch Mob?
Yes. There's this one where I've put in my time.
Yeah, right. My boys are young. We used to watch them. For me, the best day ever is a day where I can start off a little meditation, exercise, whatever that is. Maybe it's a long run or something like that. And then do some reading, do some music, and then get some kind of community. Have lunch with somebody, maybe a friend, maybe a relative, right? It's the best day is where I can hit all the markers of being able to do something creative, do something physical, do something community focused, or you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's kind of like my best day, you know? So that I'm thinking as when I get closer to quote unquote retirement, I'd like to build that out more, mm-hmm. that kind of approach.
Right. If you could wake up tomorrow with one particular talent or ability that you don't have now, what would it be?
I've always struggled with speaking languages. Some of these people you interview, I know jealousy is a sin, but they're all like, oh, I speak four or five languages. And I was like, I've been taking Spanish ever since I was in seventh grade, and I've never been able to do more than order foods. I don't know. If somebody could just like tap my brain and just say, okay, now you can speak, you know, that would be cool.
Good one. Yeah. Most used app on your iPhone?
Is the stock app. Yeah. I look at that and financial news. Well, just my deal.
Yeah. What are you reading right now?
I just finished Dr. Mike Harmon's book on living young forever, which is a really interesting kind of summary of a lot of things I've been reading and hearing about in terms of aging. What's the, from his point of view and the studies he's been doing and the people and his practice and what was his hit list of things that he's doing. That was very interesting. Just finished that one. And there's another one called Good Anxiety. Basically, she's saying, how do we take our anxiety and use it as a superpower? And I've been hearing more and more about this. A lot of times, we tend to look at things as right and wrong or winners and losers. But it's not really about winning and losing. It's about winning and learning. Because if you're doing something that you've learned from, it's not a loss. It's just something that you're going to learn from, right? This whole win or lose thing, it's more like an education. You're learning, right? So basically what I've been hearing and what's interesting about this book is she's saying, a lot of us have anxiety. Don't fight it, right? Figure out how to incorporate it and use it like as your power that you can take this energy and whatever it's trying to tell you. So that's what I'm reading. I'm going in and out of kind of fiction and nonfiction. I'm in the nonfiction world now because I'm getting older and I'm thinking about retiring and what's the encore career going to be. So I've been reading more about finance and health, you know. But I love mysteries and science fiction too, but I just haven't been there for a while.
What's the best song?
The best song? Mm-hmm. It's not the best day ever.
Agreed.
The best song? I don't know. I don't know if I have a best song. I'm enjoying some of these songs that we've been singing with in choir, you know? That last one we just sang
was
really beautiful.
That was, even James is not a big noticer of things like that. But
right.
I said, it was a good service today, and he said, that song.
I know.
It was so rich
beautiful.
And lush, and it was just...
Yeah. I don't know if I have a best song. I grew up in the 70s when it was folk music and James Taylor and, you know, that kind of stuff was big. But I don't know if any one of those songs sticks with me.
Fair enough. What's the best nighttime snack?
Yeah, a good nighttime snack is yogurt with like blueberries and maybe a little cinnamon in it or something like that.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
It's not very indulgent, but okay.
Yeah. If you want some crunch, you can have the cocoa nibs and throw that on top as well. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
What keeps you up at night?
Oh, I'd say just the triviality of work. I work at the utility and oh my gosh, we've been really busy with the storms, right? As you can imagine. The group I work in is the ones that fly the helicopters and the airplanes in order to get three-dimensional representations, it's called remote sensing, of our environment. They're using that more and more, obviously, because you don't want to go out during a storm to look at what this thing looks like. If you could look at it online and actually have a three-dimensional model and then send somebody out, this is so much better, right? It was kind of dormant for a little bit, now everybody wants it. I'm like, oh my gosh. It's a good kind of stress in a way. It's also exciting because it's just everybody wants it. We're hiring more people and growing and getting going on this, what we're calling the digital twin, where we can replicate what's out there in a digital world. That'll keep my brain going, you know.
I can imagine that. What do you think happens after we die?
I don't think we really die.
Your body doesn't die?
The body dies, but I don't know if that's us.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So what I'm thinking of is, and I know I've talked about this before, but we talk about energy, right? One of the laws of thermodynamics, and I'm not a scientist, my son is that you don't create energy, you destroy, right? So there's a certain kind of consciousness and energy that we all carry, right? So where did it come from? Nobody really knows, right? I've read a lot of interesting science fiction stories about where we get consciousness and all this stuff. But here's my thought. As humans, we are in our infancy when it comes to understanding the psychological world around us and the energies fields around us. We are just children. We're like 2 or 3 year olds, right? We know it's there. We play with it, but we just don't know what's out there, right? I think as we mature, we start to realize, oh, there's more to what's not physical than we and what meets the eye. Like that one service I gave on the whole mirror neurons thing about how somebody across the street could be feeling happy and somehow you're getting that energy. So I believe that there's these energies that just get exchanged. Now, do they get exchanged within our world? Do they get exchanged throughout the universe? I don't know. But I'm thinking that there's definitely something that's outside of us, and there's definitely something that gave us energy and that we're going to give that energy off somewhere else.
Okay.
So when we die, I think it's just like they say at the end of Ghostbusters, hey, see you on the other side. You know, there's something on that other side. And I don't know what it is, but there's an energy out there that gets transformed.
Right. Where was your favorite all-time hike?
Favorite all-time hike. Well, I have a number of them, but it has a funny name. The Desolation Wilderness in Lake Tahoe area.
Okay.
It's not actually desolate. It has a funny name. I'm not quite sure why. It's really gorgeous. Karen and I have hiked there. I've hiked there with some of my best friends. It's just really gorgeous lakes and places to camp. And it's really, really beautiful. It's in the southern Lake Tahoe area. It's really, really gorgeous stuff.
Okay. What's your favorite local charity?
Oh, the food bank, Second Harvest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And what's the best religion?
Yeah, I have the same kind of weird thought about religion that I do about death question, right? It's an energy and it's a journey. A lot of people say, I don't have a religion. It's like, what do you think happens to us? And I said, well, that's your religion. Religion is what you think happens or what's happening to us, right? I think religion is better shared in a community, right? And I remember this quote of Thomas Jefferson years ago saying, I think it's more important that people have a religion than no religion, right? And so that's why he believed in religious freedom, because he realized that everybody had their own path, right? He's like, I want to promote this joint experience of people having these religious discussions and thoughts. I would say the best religion is really what fits who you are, right? Knowing yourself and then finding that. Like I said, I found USM because I was looking for the religion that said, how do you make us better? It was kind of a bottom-up, agile kind of thing versus the top-down. But some people like the top-down. That's their personality. Go for it. Do it. Make it happen. My grandmother was a diehard Catholic, and she worked giving out food, you know, after services and stuff like that. Really worked for her. And that's great. Find the one that works for you. But be in community. I think it's important. I think the journey that we have together is a communal experience. So that's my thought.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I have really enjoyed this podcast. I just enjoyed a chance to have an actual one-on-one conversation with you, where we usually are just talking as we're passing on Sundays.
Sunday ships.
Yeah, this was really enjoyable.
I just want to point out how amazing it is to have you here. To do something like this, right?
Oh,
just to even think of doing this and then making this happen is just amazing. So really, thank you so much, Jack.
Thanks. And thanks to our listeners, both new listeners and our loyal, longtime 25-episode listeners, keep making connections.
Yay!